Will you pray with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. John saw Jesus passing by, and he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." And two of John's students took off and followed. And Jesus turned around, saw them, and said, "What are you looking for?" That question. Those are the first words of Jesus in the Gospel of John. What are you looking for? Last June, in the early days of my family's sabbatical trip to England, I knew what I was looking for. It had been less than 2 months since the sudden death of my father, and I was shattered. I felt overwhelmed all the time, and I felt broken all the time. I wanted to feel put back together. I was looking for healing. I was looking for peace. I was looking for some kind of transcendent spiritual experience that would swallow up my suffering and somehow carry me forward and somehow also be carried inside me. The evening after we'd arrived in England, we drove to a little town near Stonehenge, the Stone Age monument shrouded in myth and mystery. Some people argue that Stonehenge was an ancient burial site. Others believe it was a place of worship and sacrifice. Others see in it an ancient calendar. A recent theory suggests that it was a place people came to be healed. Another newer theory claims it was a monument to peace and unity. Most researchers believe it had multiple purposes. Apart from all the theories and debates, there is this inarguable fact. The stones there are precisely aligned to the sunset of the winter solstice and in the other direction to the sunrise of the summer solstice. The four of us arrived on the eve of summer solstice because I could not resist. I could not resist the idea of watching the sun come up over those ancient stones on a site that might have been a place of healing, a site that might also have been a place to celebrate the lives of the recently deceased. I was going there with a purpose. I was going there to look for my healing, to look for my transcendent spiritual experience, to look for some kind of answer to questions I didn't even have the words for. We went to bed at 11 o'clock that night and got up a little before 2 a.m., We piled on as many clothes as we could, and then we piled into a cab, and we went off in the dark towards the site of our pilgrimage. The taxi dropped us off, and we began the 30 to 40 minute walk through the dark towards the stones. In the dark, we couldn't quite see how many people were there, but we could hear them. Because the closer we got to the stones, the more it sounded like a carnival. There were thousands of people. We stumbled around looking for a place to stand and wait for the sun to come up. We eventually wedged ourselves in beside this tall, French guy who had been videotaping all night long and who was aggressively making the people in front of him not block his view. This seemed like a great place to stand right next to him. And so we did. We stood there waiting and freezing, and more people shoved in next to us, including a woman who somehow found her way between me and the French guy who was right here. I still don't know how she did it, but she was on top of one of my feet. It was kind of miserable. It was a lot miserable. I was willing to put up with it because I knew what I was there for. And standing there in the dark and the cold, I could pray and I could think, even with the raucous noise of the 10,000 or more people around us. I was so eager to see what was going to happen when the sun came up. I was so eager to feel whatever it was I was going to feel when the sun came up. I was so eager and so open to whatever it was that God was going to do or say to me. So I waited. And I started to feel so aggravated. Everyone was so noisy. It was like they didn't realize I was there for a spiritual experience. And at times, it was difficult to even see the rocks because everyone was holding their phones up over their heads in the way. I did that a few times, but mostly I was considerate. And there was so much jostling. And there were people there who were drunk, and it was 3:30 in the morning. And there were people there who were stoned, and I don't mean the stones of Stonehenge. And there were people who were throwing their trash on the ground. And there were so many people who were just in the way. They were in the way of the spiritual moment I had come there to have. Hell is other people, goes the famous line from Sartre's play, No Exit. And in the wee hours that morning at Stonehenge, I could not agree more. Life would be so much better if it weren't for other people, right? What are you looking for? How would you answer that question? The two men following Jesus there at the beginning of John's gospel answer his question with a question. Where are you staying? And he answers, come and see. So they go with him and they see where he's staying and they stay the day with him. He asks what they're looking for and it seems they're looking for relationship. They're looking for some kind of connection. Maybe the connection they're looking for is God, a spiritual experience, a pure, transcendent moment. But this is how it comes to them, in the form of a person, in the form of a relationship, in the form of people staying and spending time together. What are you looking for? I was looking for the sun to rise over some ancient rocks while hoping 10,000 people would shut up and settle down. When suddenly my star word flashed into my mind. The word we select at random during worship on Epiphany Sunday. A word that's an invitation to serve as a source of reflection and prayer and discernment for the year ahead. And my star word for 2019 was companionship. I get it, God. Okay. I looked out over the thousands of people as the first rays of sunrise washed over all of us, and I realized, my companions, this mess of people, all of them, the drunk ones, the stoned ones, the belligerent ones, the litter bugs, my companions in brokenness, messiness, neediness, my companions in seeking. I was there looking for some sort of doorway to the divine, and I found the doorway, but it was not in the stones or the sunrise or silence. Not that morning. It was there, like it or not, in that mess of people around me. I felt my vision shift as the sun warmed all those faces. I was overwhelmed with something that felt like love, compassion for all of them, including me. We were the beloved, and I knew it. Obviously, all those pilgrims were only my companions for a few brief hours on a cold Friday morning in June, except for the three I got to come home with. They're still my companions. But those 10,000 people have continued to companion me along the road of my spiritual journey these last several months, reminding me of some of the bigger truths of my faith. I believe that Jesus came to break down the walls between us and God and between us and each other. And I believe we find that easier when we think about the God part than about the other people part. But I think that's because we find ways to think of God more as a concept, so that the love of God can stay kind of theoretical, maybe interior. We love the idea of God, and we try to divorce that idea from what's around us. We try to divorce the spiritual from the material as if such a thing were possible. The answer to the question Jesus put to the disciples of what they were looking for, maybe what they were looking for was big spiritual things too deep for words, but Jesus didn't give them a spiritual answer. His response was to invite them into his space. Invite them into his time. And is there anything we guard more than our space and our time? Maybe our money, but it represents our time. His response to their longing was relationship. His response was community. There's no healing for the deep alienation and conflict in our world but this: relationship, community. There is no peace in our world without this: community. And we feel helpless as little individuals in the face of the huge, dramatic, and traumatic issues that face our world, and we feel like we've got to come up with drastic solutions. But there may be nothing more drastic or more daring than this: to create stable communities in which people are accepted and embraced and loved. All the things we wish were happening out there, the peace and understanding, the listening, the laying down of weapons, the healing of the earth, all those big things we wish were fixed, It starts here first, in the little community we create right here. Community of authenticity, of unconditional acceptance, of unconditional respect, of listening, of helping each other and others feel safe, of showing up for each other and for others. This kind of community starts with commitment. A commitment to hold the unconditional love of God as the basis for everything else. That means accepting that unconditional love for our own selves, however hard it is to believe, and offering that unconditional love to others, however hard they may seem to make it. Commitment to creating community with each other means being intentional. It means making ourselves available to each other. It means being authentic, vulnerable. It means forgiving and accepting forgiveness. It means offering a fresh start, accepting a fresh start. It means practicing radical hospitality. It means embracing and even celebrating our differences rather than ignoring them or rejecting them. It means choosing to stay even when things get rough, especially when things get rough. The real reboot when it comes to committing ourselves to creating community is the refreshing of our vision. Come and see, Jesus said. And we have to choose how we're going to see. We have to choose how we're going to see people, including ourselves. Will we look with the soft eyes of love and kindness? Will we look with deep respect that does not have to be earned first? Will we look this way at our own selves? We have to choose to see this way, and then we have to choose it again, and then we have to choose it again, and then every day we have to get up and choose to see with eyes of love. Imagine the healing of our world when a group of people like us decide this is how we're going to see and this is how we're going to be. We're going to commit ourselves to truly Christian community. Paul lays out what that looks like in pretty practical and somewhat difficult seeming words. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit. In humility, regard others as better than yourselves. Look not to your own interests, but to the interests of others, which if everyone does, you don't have to worry if you're going to be okay, because you're going to be okay. We make the community together a safe place for everyone. Jesus shows up when we show up for each other. Jesus stays where we stay together. Where are you staying? They ask him. Come and see, he says. There's an old story about a dying order of monks who lived in a monastery deep in the woods. Only a small handful of elderly monks remained, and no one ever came to visit anymore for prayer or for learning. On the edge of the woods near the monastery, there was a little hut that a rabbi had built to go on retreat from time to time to meditate and pray. One day, when the rabbi was in his little hut, the abbot of the old monastery came to visit him to ask if he had any wisdom, if he had any advice that could help him save the monastery from dying out. The rabbi welcomed the abbot with an embrace. They broke bread together, which is what it means to be a companion. They read the Torah together. They spoke of deep things. And then the abbot shared his pain about the dying monastery with the rabbi and asked if the rabbi had any wisdom to share. The rabbi said, "I have no advice to give, but I will give you a teaching. The Messiah is among you." So the abbot returned to the monastery, puzzled. When he got there, he called the other four monks together and told them, "The rabbi said, one of us is the Messiah." And the monks were astonished. "What could this mean?" they asked themselves. "The Messiah? How could this be? Who could it be? Is it Brother John? He's always so kind to everyone. Or maybe it's Brother Philip. The way he always advocates for the disenfranchised, it's just like what the Messiah would do. We know it's not Brother Matthew. He is so cranky. He couldn't be the Messiah. But then again, he does always show up to help right at the time you need someone. Of course, the Messiah isn't me. I'm just an ordinary person. But what if he did mean me?" So the monks began looking for the Messiah in each other and glimpsing the Messiah in each other and in themselves, and treating each other the way they would treat the Messiah, with extraordinary respect and affection. And on the off chance that each monk himself might be the Messiah, they began to treat themselves with that same kind of unconditional acceptance and love and kindness. And they began to live together as people who had found that beautiful, special something they had been looking for. And word got out. And people began to notice and see. And they were so deeply moved by how the monks lived and how they treated each other. And word spread, and before long, people were coming from all over to experience the love and the radical kindness of this little community. And then others began to join them and practice that same unconditional love and respect and kindness. And the community grew to be a shining example for the world of what healing and love can do. What are you looking for? Come and see. Come and be.